Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and today my guest is Otessa Moshfegh. She is the author of three books. I'll name them in order. The first, McGlue, won the Fence Fiction Prize. It's a novella, it's a seagoing yarn. It's an extraordinary book about dependency and about the forces, like the ocean, the things that operate beyond one's available intention. The second book, Eileen, is a novel. It was nominated for the Booker Prize. And the third, the newest book, Homesick for Another World, is a book of short stories. They've been published in the Paris Review, in the New Yorker, and I'm very interested because I think McGlue, the first, is a contemporary classic. Eileen has been given a certain kind of pride of place by nomination for one of the internationally major awards. And the third, Homesick for Another World, has been given the kind of attention that people get when they get accepted by the New Yorker, by the Paris Review. But I'd say that all three books, in a certain sense, operate in a polarity between disgust and repellence. Mm. And that there is, in the books throughout, the concept of another world that the title of the newest book, Homesick for Another World, that this place is not a place the narrators tend to want to be. They would rather be in another world. Mm-hmm. It seems so systematic across the board. Has that been a feeling of longstanding of yours?
Yes. I didn't really understand that I was in the world until I was five. I grew up in Newton, Massachusetts. I never quite understood what was going on. I think it's kind of common for children to have that sort of like deep-seated paranoia that everything is a show set up for them. And that's what it felt like to be alive. Everything felt completely fake and orchestrated. And actually, I had a very traumatic experience with it when the first time I left the country. My mother's parents, well, they're both deceased now, but she's from Croatia. And the first time I took a trip to Croatia, I was five. And I understood that the entire trip was set up, the entire planet was set up so that they could bring me to this other place and abandon me. And the first thing that happened was for whatever reason, my mother scheduled the flights. This was like in 1986, with a layover in Zurich. And we had to spend a night in a hotel. And as soon as we got there, we checked into the hotel. I was with my older sister and my baby brother and my mom. My dad wasn't with us. We went to a carnival in the middle of Zurich. I didn't obviously speak the language. I had never been anywhere before. I was a child. And my sister and I walked into this haunted house. The last third of it was pitch darkness, and my sister abandoned me there. So I had gone all this way with so much courage as a child, thinking the whole world is a stage, and this trip is set up to abandon me in another world, basically death. And the first thing that happens is my big sister abandons me in the darkness. And I was convinced that when I found my way out, I would not be in the same world. But in fact, my family was just standing around as though they had been waiting on me and what took so long. And that was pretty devastating. That experience combined with a different experience around the same age when I was in kindergarten, sitting on the floor, listening to my stupid teacher read some book. I looked at the clock. I was so bored. I looked at the clock and I saw the second hand move. And in that moment, I understood time and my own mortality. And I just looked around and said, oh, F. So, you know, that was my awakening. And ever since then, I've been like, is this real? Is this actually real? Is this just a projection of my imagination? Can I control things? No, I can't. And but then again, I can. And I think, you know, my characters are all obsessed with this other world because there is no world. It's all another world. I'm not the kind of malcontent that thinks, oh, just the world is total horse manure. People are evil and I want off the planet. No, the planet is absolutely beautiful. People are fascinating. Interesting things happen to me all the time. I fell in love a month ago after years of celibacy. I mean, things can be exciting. So, you know, I'm open to being surprised all the time. You were talking about how you felt like blessed with having this show for 28 years and that you've been allowed to do exactly what you want. You know, I think that's not everybody's experience who's a genius. And I feel like I also have that kind of lucky star.
Yes.
And
I say it's that an angel kissed me before I came here, that there was a kiss that lasted through a lifetime. And no matter what, its permanence, its power, its invulnerability remained, so that no matter what stupidities I might perform or lack of appropriate understanding, that I was still protected by that angelic kiss, and that it's still fortunately there to rescue me. But really the secret is that the kiss is reading. Mm-hmm. To get out of this world for me is as easy as turning to a book and opening it. And if it's a special book, the way I particularly felt about McGlue, everything about it beguiles me.
Mm-hmm.
Where did its language come from? Where did its characters come from? How did these characters in this language come to be accessible to this writer?
Mm-hmm.
Because it really does seem that it was written by someone other than the person who wrote the other two books. It has a different field of language, and I escaped into it, whereas Eileen sort of terrified me without rewarding me with the pleasure of escape.
Mm-hmm.
Eileen was very much in this world, the mm-hmm. horrors of this mm-hmm. world, with the inescapable
mm-hmm.
at one side at all times.
Isn't it awful?
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Otessa Moshfegh about her book McGlue and her novel Eileen.
Well, let me tell you how I wrote McGlue then.
Please.
Because I wrote it, I think I wrote it when I was 27, 28, I'm 35 now. So it's been a while. But it was a visceral experience writing that book. I was living in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was looking one day for really no reason through the archives at Brown University's, you know, online archives of periodicals, and found this one newspaper from 1851. I can't remember its name, but it was local news in around Salem. And there was a very short article, and the name, the title of it was McGlue. And I understood at that moment that I had just been touched by either Satan or God, because I was suddenly, I felt it. And McGlue entered my body. And this article was maybe three sentences long, and all it said was, McGlue, age 32, has been acquitted on account of murder, which he is indeed guilty of, having murdered so-and-so Johnson in the port of Zanzibar last spring. The judge deemed him unfit to stand trial because he had committed the murder in a state of blackout drunkenness, and because several months prior to setting sail, he had jumped off a moving train and cracked open his head. There's the whole book. The book was handed to me by God. So I went home and I began screeching out this book. I edited this book not at all. It came out channeled like the whole universe going through a pin. It was so painful, psychically painful, this man speaking to me from beyond. And I sensed the depths of his suffering, his alcoholic suffering. But more than that, just being somebody who absolutely didn't know how to exist as himself in that time and place, who wanted out all the whole time and yet wanted so desperately to be loved. And I think that at the heart of McGlue, it's a love story. And like every good love story, we destroy the thing that we love, because what the hell else are we going to do? Anyway, so I got really crazy writing McGlue. I really couldn't talk to anybody for a while, except that I started to see this woman who was like a, well, she calls herself a clairsentient. And it was really kind of kismet meeting her. She's beautiful. Her talent is she can touch you and understand things psychically, even outside of your own body, but just like that she has her finger on the universe through the body. And I had been seeing her once a month, kind of being like, I'm going crazy writing this book. And, you know, I don't know what, maybe I'm possessed. And she looked at me and she said, oh, Tessa, do you realize what you're wearing? And I was wearing a sailor's jacket. I hadn't even realized it. And so then I started to take this whole like psychic channeling thing kind of literally. But I'll tell you another thing about writing that book. I didn't realize until I would say 4/5 of the way through writing it that McGlue was in love with Johnson. I was completely in the dark.
Well, that, it seems to me, is evident and is one of the beauties of the book, because McGlue himself doesn't know
right, either,
and that you're co-occupying McGlue's mind. But gradually the reader sees that, like some sea shanty, that this is a love ballad,
mm-hmm.
and the language in it is also, I don't know how to put it, it's not that it's not in English,
mm-hmm.
but it's in the English of transfigured love.
Yeah.
And they're concealing from one another in their conversations how much they've come to mean. What they want to do constantly is nestle together,
mm-hmm.
which means that they're always tired.
Mm-hmm.
They always want to sleep
mm-hmm.
in straw.
Sounds so nice.
It's very nice. And there is nothing to be done, because Johnson is the son of rich parents.
Mm-hmm.
He can make his way through the world. He can leave. He never really wanted to be a sailor. He's not a sailor. It's
mm-hmm.
just an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas McGlue is stuck in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnson will leave him. And the only way to keep him is to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a book.
Yeah.
Like now,
yeah.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Otessa Moshfegh. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Otessa Moshfegh. We're really talking about three books, and we're going to take our time about it. The first is McGlue. It's published by Fence Books, and it is a novella. It is still available. You don't have to go through elaborate contortions to get it. You can get it, even though it comes from a small press. The second book was Eileen, and as I understand it, you wrote Eileen so that you could write books like McGlue.
Well, oh God. I mean, when I think about McGlue now, I've really changed. And it makes me sad because I think having written Eileen, I sort of poisoned myself with the world a little bit too much. I set out to write Eileen. I was living in L.A. This is when I just had moved to L.A., and I was absolutely broke. And I was under the delusion that I could make money selling a novel, which sounds so Victorian in a way. So Eileen was a very deliberate and slightly hostile experiment. Like, well, okay, I need to make some money. What's going to sell? And then how can I use that and pervert it in a way that will satisfy me as an artist? And Eileen is a little bit too close to the world, as you said, for me to really appreciate it. When I read it, it feels false. It feels like a performance. And it's funny that that book has gotten so much attention. And the kinds of conversations that I've had about Eileen have so much to do with, oh, the first question I always get is, why did you write such an unlikable character? And I really hate answering that question because the answer is because we love to hate people. We love that.
David Sedaris said about having read Eileen that by the end of it, he felt he was covered with scum, but that it was pleasurable. And I, reading it, by the end, I couldn't move. I was paralyzed in a state of, dare I say, moronic disgust.
Sounds like sex. Sounds exactly like sex.
The woman lives next door to a prison for young boys. She works there. She's an assistant there. And she is impassive, like most of us, to the suffering around her. Mm-hmm. It's her own hatred of her father. They're both alcoholics. He is a big eater. She is bulimic. There's a horrible comedy to the amount that one wants to eat and the other wants to expel. They seem to punish each other. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if Eileen's father waits for the rain to send Eileen out to buy gin for him. The characters in this book are all in punishing relations to one another. And the question of the book is, how can you break out of that cycle? And the answer is kind of, you can't unless you really become a ferocious and punishing creature.
Someone has to die.
Someone has to die. It's a book that people can't stop reading. You know something awful is in the works, and it's the hunger for the awful that causes this book, Eileen, by my guest, Otessa Moshfegh, to glue itself to the reader. Mm-hmm. Now, what you discovered was if you take that kind of book and twist and pervert it enough, it will be nominated for a Booker Prize.
It also won the Penn Hemingway Award, which really shocked me. I try to enjoy it, and I have a bank account now that isn't always empty. And that's extremely important to me, that I can buy myself a sandwich so that I could write the next book, which I've just finished. I've just wrote another novel, which was a whole other experience.
You say that you let the world get too close to you.
Yeah.
In Eileen, can you escape it?
I think I will now, but I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes I think I just need to move away, you know, and I might do that. I might leave America. I don't know what to do.
Where might you go?
I don't know.
This is a trick question because I'm thinking of it too.
Well, it is the question. I think a lot of people are asking themselves that question right now. But for me, it doesn't even feel political. It just feels like people are stupid and I need to get away. So maybe like, you know where I was really happy? The Maasai Mara in Kenya, watching the giraffes and the elephants and the gazelles and the wildebeests and the ostriches or whatever. I like being around animals. They make me feel alive.
What brought you there?
Well, I have a very good friend who is part-time living in Nairobi. She's writing a book on traffic accidents.
Really?
Yeah.
Nairobian traffic accidents?
Yeah, like traffic and accidents in Kenya. I can't wait to see it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now tell me, on the one hand, people are stupid. On the other hand, you have the amazing friends.
Yeah.
Are they the exception to the rule?
Well, the truth is, nobody's really stupid. That's just the thing that my head tells me so that it can function with some singularity. My ego is, I have a huge ego, and also grew up a lot of, you know, I was raised by classical musicians, and this idea of genius, you know, was always really big. And I was a pretty serious pianist, and my mother always told me that I was better than everybody else because it was her way of instilling me with self-esteem, which I think she didn't get when she was growing up. So I have that voice in my head, and of course it's caused a lot of social problems. But it's also attracted me to the people who are spectacular. And I don't have friends that I don't think are geniuses. I think they're absolutely brilliant. I learn something from them all the time. And also, we get to experience the vulnerability of letting our guards down together safely. Yeah, so people aren't stupid, although there's a lot of stupidity in the world. I'm stupid. I mean, I can be very stupid, too.
Yeah, we all are. Just think of the things we allow to happen around us. I thought when reading Eileen that another way in which it was satisfying to readers, not the readers who thought that it was a thriller, but the readers who came to the end and realized that it involved ritual sacrifice, and that as such, it had a kind of mythological element that was necessary and even sacred, that Eileen had suffered so much that it would take an incursion from the sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, I would say in this book, an angel arrives, or imp, with flaming red hair.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know much about her because it seems to me there isn't much to know. She's a form of Deus Ex Machina, and she's going to bring some kind of retribution, forgiveness, and even happiness into the frame of this novel. Eileen can't take it. It's too beyond her ken, the thing that she is given a display of, which is retribution and death as the only solution to the problems of misery.
Mm-hmm.
And she needs to escape. We know she does. She's telling us the story years later, and now we are hearing about Eileen, who does not get what she wants, but doesn't get what she didn't want either.
Right, which is exactly what life feels like, really. But yeah, it's written by Eileen 50 years after the story has happened. So there's also this veil of aged self-analysis and something a little bit untrue about the storytelling. But yeah, I mean, it's a conventional novel in a lot of ways. It starts off with a very long exposition of status quo misery, and then da-da-da-da, here comes the thing that's going to disrupt everything, which is the character of Rebecca. And then, you know, the question is whether Eileen is going to take what is being offered. How is she going to take it? And what is she going to do about it? And if she's a hero or a coward. And I think in the end, she's a hero.
I've been talking with Otessa Moshfegh, author of McGlue and Eileen. We're going to be talking about her new book, Homesick for Another World, next week. The first book was published by Fence Books, and the second two, Homesick for Another World and Eileen, are published by Penguin Press. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from McGlue at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Acting as co-producer today is Alan Howard. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Otessa Moshfegh is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.